again, it's something I've researched quite a lot, and there's around 100 dreams going around in each of our heads of places we want to go, people we want to meet, things we want to achieve, things we want to see in our lives. And we tend to keep them quite separate from work, which is one way of doing it. You know, work can fuel dreams outside of work. But wouldn't it be amazing if your employer could help make some of those dreams come true with you?
Hi, everybody. I'm Jonathan Richards, and this is the HR Heroes podcast, brought to you by Breathe HR. In this series, we're celebrating and sharing the stories of small businesses who are doing a great job of managing their people and are, in my eyes, HR heroes. And my guest today is Nikki Gattenby. Nikki is the MD of PropellerNet, a creative search agency that's on a mission to make all our lives better. She talks to me about jet skiing to work, how she makes her employees' dreams come true, and what led her to write her book, Super Engaged.
Hi, Nikki. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show, and congratulations for making it onto the Breathe Culture Leaders list.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we were absolutely delighted when we found out, so thank you. It's a great accolade to have.
No, it was awesome. We thought your entry was really stand out. Look, I'm really excited to be talking with you, because PropellerNet is one of the most admired companies in the creative hub around Brighton, which is close to where we're based. And I think there's a lot of businesses across the UK that would really benefit from knowing more about how you built your culture and how you nurture it, because I see you as being really on the extreme, the real culture evangelist. And I think there's a huge amount that we can talk about. I'm almost struggling to work out how we can limit the subjects we talk about. So is it okay, for the benefit of the listeners, if you just sort of kick off by introducing yourself and then maybe give a bit of an overview as to what PropellerNet does?
Absolutely, no problem at all. So I'm Nikki Gattenby, owner and MD of PropellerNet. We're a digital marketing agency based in Brighton, operating globally. We have our roots in search marketing, and our main objective is to enable brands that we work with to be found online to create measurable business success. With search as a backbone to everything we do, we're sitting on a mountain of anonymized customer data based on the millions of Google searches happening around the world today on a daily basis. There's some insane numbers around 44,000 searches a second, billions every day and trillions every year. So we have a deep insight to know what customers are looking for and can create the ability to help our brands be answers for those searches. So our aim is to help customers and make their life better online, so they know what they're looking for, they can find what they're looking for, and then engaged in that entire journey. We define the strategy around it through technical ability, creative chops, great PR and great paid media, again, to enable our clients to be found for what they deserve to be found for, and give great answers to those searches that millions of us are making every day.
Brilliant. Excellent. Okay, now that's great. I get that. And what I wanted to start with was how your adventure started at PropellerNet, because you weren't one of the founders, where you came in as an MD. How did that all come about?
It's really interesting. I've been working in ad agencies and direct marketing agencies in London and luckily Paris for most of my career. And had a wonderful time. It was absolutely brilliant, fantastic learning culture. We worked hard, we play hard. And out of the blue, I got a call from Jack Hubbard to say, would you come and work with us? And Jack's one of the founders. Just prior to that, we were skiing with friends of ours, and their daughter worked at PropellerNet. And she said to me, Nick, we want to have someone come in and run the business, professionalise what we're doing, sort of help us to get to the next level. And I said to her, not even thinking about changing roles, why don't you give me the job description? I'll farm it out to a few of my mates and see if I can save you a recruitment fee. So she duly did, and I shared it with three people. They couldn't take the role for whatever reason. And a few months later, Jack got on the phone and said, I'd really like to work with you. And he really made me think differently about how a business could run, because I'd worked with many captains of industry in London and learned an incredible amount, but I was slightly disappointed at the sole line focus on money a lot of the time, and margin, and then potentially the price on people's head. I'm a much more people-focused person, and I believe we should be able to have fun every day in what we're doing, and we shouldn't be working 90-hour weeks. We shouldn't have a burnout issue we do in our industry. And there was a different way of engaging and doing brilliant work, not just through sheer hours applied to the business. And Jack and I share a very similar philosophy on that. And it was a start of a really interesting conversation. It actually took more than a year for me to make the decision to change and move. But it was very much based on that alignment of vision and values around how work should be and how to do great work.
Great. And I was just chuckling to myself there. There's a thought. We shouldn't be working 90-hour weeks, eh? In what world does that make sense?
Absolutely. When did it become normal for cerebral careers like being a doctor or a lawyer or in the creative industries to be life-threatening? I mean, there's a lot of research into this now, and I really take my hat off to the Danes. I was at a conference recently and I met an incredible chap, Alexander, who runs Woohoo Inc. Or it needs to be Woohoo. And yeah. He has, in Denmark, they have a word for happiness at work. And the pronunciation, please excuse me, any Danish listeners, is Arbejdsglæde, which is wonderful that they have a word for happiness at work. But the other end of the spectrum, in Japan, there's it's so prevalent that people die through overwork at work. But they have a word for death of work, and it's karoshi. And I think we should all be focusing on being at the Arbejdsglæde end of the spectrum, certainly not anywhere near karoshi. But unfortunately, we do have an issue, particularly in the creative and media industry, of burnout and real impact on physical health, which doesn't enable you to do good work. It's counterproductive at the end of the day.
Yeah, totally agree. Just on the topic of you joining PropellerNet, I heard a rumor or a story about a jet ski trip.
Yes, in the many conversations Jack and I had about me coming or me not coming to the agency, I said to him, I had this mad dream that we jet skied from Worthing to Brighton to get to work. And he went, Jack's brilliant. He said, come on, let's do it. Just to challenge me. So it was great. Well, we went down to the harbour in Shoreham and we took out a couple of jet skis with an instructor. And Jack was very gentlemanly and he let me go first. I hadn't told him at the time that I had a motorbike licence and was quite comfortable going at speed. So when the instructor said to me, could you just bob off down that way in that direction, Nick, and turn around and come back and see how steady you are. Went off on the jet ski, almost popped a wheelie at speed, and then came back and Jack was like, oh my god, okay, so you can ride a jet ski then. And we had a great fun getting from Worthing to Brighton. It was a really exhilarating thing, and not normally what you would do in terms of thinking about changing your career and yeah. Doing something different in business.
Brilliant. Very much set the tone though, I guess.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I do with everybody who comes on the podcast is I'm interested in the language around company culture. A lot of companies don't seem to have the language to be able to describe their culture. So first off, what does the term company culture mean to you?
It's how we run our business. When Peter Drucker talked about culture eats strategy for breakfast, he was absolutely right. Culture can be your competitive advantage. It's the thing that sets you aside from the competition. In more the ways than you can imagine, but it's how you live it. It's not necessarily how you write it down on a piece of paper and put it in a drawer. And you're right, the language is so important. Our culture is very much defined by our vision and our mission, and our mission is to make life better. And that's can be seen as a nebulous statement, but it guides all of our decision making. And it came from a really defining moment when to start with, our culture wasn't clearly defined, and our vision wasn't clearly defined, and it was latent, but our focus was on, you know, getting the money in and winning new clients and being able to make the next payroll run. But when we really started thinking about it, we met a chap called Ben Hunt Davies, who people may have heard of. He's an Olympic rower, and he was talking about the time when he and his 8-man crew won the gold at the Sydney 2000 Olympics. He was on the GB team at the same time as Steve Redgrave and Matthew Pinson, so kind of a big crowd to be followed. And he was seen as the underdog, him and his team. They didn't think they were going to get anywhere near the podium, let alone win gold. But they had a very different idea. He and his team wanted to win gold. So the 4 years running up to the Olympics, they had this mantra that governed everything they did. And that mantra, and because it's rowing, is beautifully simple. It was, will it make the boat go faster? Well, sitting in the training camp for 2 hours, make the boat go faster. Yes, let's do it. We're going to the pub to have a pie and a pint, make the boat go faster. No, then we won't do it. They didn't even go to the opening ceremony of the Sydney Olympics because they thought it wouldn't make the boat go faster. And Ben was telling the story and he was handing around his gold medal. And I don't know if anyone has held a gold medal, even won one, but to hold an Olympic medal is quite a profound thing. They're heavy and they're beautiful and they're really detailed. And And it made us really think we needed a guiding vision for us and something that guides our principles and our decision making. And over time it developed, and ours is, will it make life better? Is a question again. And we apply it on many levels. So it can seem like this big statement, but what does it mean? Well, when we take on a new client, we think, can we make life better for this client? Do we understand their business? Are we excited by their business? Do we share similar values? Can we work in a great way together? Do we want to work together? Can we add value to what they're doing? Can we make life better? Because if we can't, we better find that out at the start. Otherwise, we're not going to have a great relationship. Do we understand their customers? How can we understand what their customers are looking for? Can we make their lives better online? Because if we can, and we entertain them, we engage them in what we're looking for our clients to be found for, then brilliant. We can make life better on two levels. When new people come into the agency and come in for an interview, we think, you know, how can we make life better for each other? This isn't a selfish thing. It's not how can I make life better for myself? It's a selfless thing. How can we make life better for each other? How can this person really fly in our business? How can they add loads of value to other people in the business? And we think about it on a community level as well. How can we make life better for our community? And it's guiding a lot of the things that we're doing, particularly working with Brighton Housing Trust and a number of us being trustees for local charities to really put our business now into another sphere. So this whole make life better ethos we have, it's locked up there in our logo. It's something that's not on a piece of paper. We live it and we breathe it every day, and it impacts all of our values and the way that we operate.
And if that's great. And if you can't make life better, if you decide you can't make life better for a customer, what then?
If we have a grown-up conversation and we talk about the fact that we might not be right for each other, that normally happens at the beginning of the engagement. If we know that we're possibly not going to be brilliant at working with that customer, that client, we will say so. There's no point in hoping. Hope isn't a strategy. Culture is a strategy. And you need to be honest about what makes each other tick. We don't want to be treated badly. We certainly would never want to treat a client badly. But if you don't click, and of course we don't click with everybody, not everyone clicks with everyone around the world,
yeah,
it's better to be upfront about it and be honest from the start, because the last thing you want is a client relationship where neither of you are benefiting. The client won't enjoy it, you won't enjoy it, and you won't get great work out at the end of the day, and everyone will be disappointed. Let's avoid that like the plague. Let's just be grown up from the start.
Totally, totally. Just one more piece back on the language around culture. People talk about culture being built, or sometimes they talk about culture evolving. Is, in your view, is culture built? Is it deliberate, or does it have to grow naturally?
I think it's both. I think it's a kind of push me pull you approach. You need to put out there the ideas, but you need to let other people help make them fly. So we've put out into the business our values of innovation and creativity. It's what clients tend to buy us for, but what they will feel is fun, adventure and well-being. Those are our five values, and we live them in various different ways. So if we take well-being, for instance, a subject very close to my heart, it's all very well at being a word or on a piece of paper or on a wall in a poster, but we live the values. And one of the ways we do that is through well-being check-ins. We're really keen that people take care of themselves, because the more you take care of yourself, the more vibrant you'll be, the more engaged you can be, the more better work you'll do. And we ask four questions. Now, this doesn't cost anything. It's just a conversation. And we ask them four things. One, are you taking your holiday? I can't tell you the amount of holidays I've had to cancel in my time. And it's really damaging for your health. So are you taking a holiday? We actively ask people to take the holiday. Quarter of the way through the year, have you taken a quarter of your holiday? If you haven't, can you make sure you take some time out? Halfway through, please take some holiday. I don't know how many people have rolled holiday over, but it's not healthy. We're really clear that people need to take a time out. It's not an hour to go. Just take some time away from the business. You know, we're not robots yet. We need time to unplug and recharge. So that's the first question. Are you taking a holiday? The second one is, we offer 12 Propel days a year, 12 days to go and propel yourself forward. I'm not particularly interested in what someone's going to be doing on that day. I'm very happy to talk about it. What I'm interested in is their own personal development and growth and what they're going to do differently back in the agency once they've taken a Propel day. We also have a resident coach, and the invitation is there. It's completely voluntary to work with the coach. And like all good sports teams and high-performing teams, I think people can always get better. And you can work with a coach on a regular basis to, you know, help really change how your performance output is. And if people aren't taking us up on the resident coach and they aren't taking their Propel days, I start to question whether they're taking their personal development seriously. You know, being an engaged culture and working on culture isn't just about being nice to each other. It's about challenging each other and trying to be the best version of yourself. And the last thing we ask, apart from holiday, Propel days, working with a coach, is, are you using the health cash plan? Again, I don't need to know what you're using it for. I want to know that you know how to use it, and your family do too if they're on the plan with you, because we need to take care of our eyes, we need to go and have regular tests, and we need to, you know, make sure we are healthy in body and mind. So, you know, the language and the way it works has to be lived. it can't sit on a piece of paper in a drawer, but you need to let other people take that forward too and take care of each other too. And the wellbeing stuff that goes on in the agency isn't all driven by me. It comes from everybody, but you need to be a catalyst to making it happen.
Great. Yeah. Just you mentioned again something in there about your values that's made me skip forward in what I wanted to talk to you about. You say as one of your values is adventure. And I've always had it as a really important in my life to get a good level of adventure in there. And clearly it's important for you to do that and to get people to strive or even to achieve their dreams. How do you go about that? How do you go about getting people to be more adventurous?
Well, it's really interesting because we value adventure because fear of the unknown stifles innovation and creativity, and it leads to this cycle of diminishing returns. And we're working in the bleeding edge of technology a lot of the time. You know, we can't be scared of innovation and creativity. We need to have an adventurous spirit. So by facing challenges and facing that kind of thing, we can turn them into opportunities. And one of the things we talk about with our team is their dreams, which is a really unusual question to be asked at work. You know, Tell me about your dream. What are you dreaming of doing? But again, it's something I've researched quite a lot. And there's around 100 dreams going around in each of our heads of places we want to go, people we want to meet, things we want to achieve, things we want to see in our lives. And we tend to keep them quite separate from work, which is one way of doing it. You know, work can fuel dreams outside of work. But wouldn't it be amazing if your employer could help make some of those dreams come true with you, or, you know, actually bring your dreams into the business? So we actively talk about people's dreams, and I really encourage people to have a side hustle. Places I've worked before, it was frowned upon to work elsewhere or have something going on the side because it would be taken away from the business you're in. I believe the opposite. Yeah. I think if you've got an interest outside of work or there's something going on for you that you'd like to do more of in work, you're only going to be more engaged if you can bring it in. So I encourage people to have a side hustle. I love the fact they do things outside of work. So Lucy has a floristry business and I absolutely applaud her for doing it. It's wonderful what she's doing. She's making other people really happy with it, but she's also very engaged in her job when she's working with us. So we encourage side hustles, but we ask about dreams. And when people pass their probation at 6 months in, I ask them two questions. And I say to them, what can you do personally, not what other people can do, but what can you do personally to make this agency more successful and how you earn your seat? And if that happens and we are not successful, talk to me about some dreams you'd like to make come true. And what the wonderful thing is, you know, there's less than 60 of us, but I've got around 300 dreams of the team going around in my head. And they often put opportunities of how we can help make them come true. And it really does push you out of your comfort zone when you start thinking about dreams, because it's things that you only ever dream about half the time. But when they start to become reality, you start to think differently.
Yeah, totally. So just touching on your purpose again, to make life better. And I read on your website, to make life better for our clients, their customers, our team and our community. And you've covered what that looks like in practice. Do you actually measure it?
In terms of client satisfaction, absolutely we do. We call our clients. We have Net Promoter Score calls. We ask them to rate us on 1 to 10. How likely would they be to recommend us? You often see that question elsewhere. But if you're recommending something, you're kind of putting your reputation on the line. So you tend to be more truthful about it. And our scores are really high. They're in the 9s and 10s, which is great. We have active promoters of our business and we win a lot of new business through our current clients, which a lot of agencies do. You know, referrals is a great way to get new business. So we measure that metric, you know, how satisfied are our clients. In terms of our employees, we do the same. We run, we regularly go for the Great Places to Work Award, and we've been in the top 20 best places to work in the UK for the last 6 years running. We also do an internal culture catalyst check on all 100 different dimensions of our business that we want to make sure are healthy and are working in the right way, so that we have regular data around it. In terms of customers, we get, it's almost one step removed, but we get feedback from our clients. I mean, sales are the ultimate feedback in terms of what you're getting, but also, you know, this day and age, we get wonderful sentiment feedback from customers. You get great feedback through social media, both good and bad, as to what's going well and what's not going well. So there's different metrics we can use in each area. And in terms of our community, we've worked with Brighton Housing Trust for 3-4 years now, and were fundraiser of the year last year. Dan, the guy who really was interested in working with BHT, was rewarded with a Fundraiser of the Year award. So we know we're Amazing. Doing good work with the charities.
Yeah, so that, and I love that because it takes, I think your words were the make life better as a purpose could be seen as being a bit, I don't think you used the word, but could be a bit fluffy. But actually, if you're measuring it in such a really dedicated and accurate way, then you know whether you're achieving it or not, don't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, it shows up in the numbers every time in terms of business metrics. So our staff turnover is just 7% against an industry average of 30%. That's based on the latest IPA report. So we avoid a significant degree of waste in the system compared to other agencies where there might be a bit more of a revolving door. We don't need to spend that time and money on recruitment. And that's before we've taken into account any recruitment agency commissions. The average time off sick in our team is a day a year versus 5 to 12, depending what report you look at on the national average, which is, again, amazing for our bottom line. But it's not only that, it's positive for the well-being of the whole team. Planned time out of the business, which, you know, we encourage, is a good thing. So we need people to take holiday and we can plan around it, ensure we have everyone in place. We have freelancers if there's too much holiday going on to cover the work. But unplanned absence, so people calling in sick, has a massive negative impact on the well-being of the rest of the team. Someone calls in sick in the morning, it doesn't necessarily impact me directly, but the team working with them, it absolutely does, because the work still needs to be done. So having a lower sick rate overall is better for the collective well-being of the full team. And 98% of the team say that they would recommend working at the Permanent, which I'm so proud of. It gives a really strong understanding of how people feel about and what they will talk about with their friends about the agency, which is brilliant for not only potential their well-being, but potential new people and potential new clients. It's kind of become our own marketing machine, if you like.
We pledge to invest in our company culture, regardless of our business size, to benefit our people and propel our business forward. Why don't you take the culture pledge? Visit breathehr.com/pledge to sign up now.
You've got the idea, or I've read about the idea of 60 precious C. What does that look like? How do you do that?
Okay, we've decided to cap the size of the team to 60 people, and I've been challenged on this a number of times. One was a very direct challenge of, you're not ambitious enough, which is interesting. And I beg to differ. I'm not alone. More and more people are recognising that in the 21st century, growth isn't just about bums on seats. If you're running a future field, innovation focused, people first business, you should be able to come up with better solutions than that. We could double the size of the agency in a matter of months. We could take on more and more work, but it wouldn't necessarily increase the quality of the work, the fun factor, or the margin. And all three of those are very, very important. In fact, it could lead to less space, more management, more process and operational headaches. If we doubled the revenue and doubled the headcount, we'd have the same revenue per person as before, except we'd be busting at the seams and have to manage twice the staff. So instead of the number of people in the business, we focus on the revenue per person and how we can innovate in our growth to generate more revenue per person. And that does not mean people working more hours. It has a profound effect on how you run the business. So it affects the clients you accept. You develop a phobia of this wonderful term, profit vampires, which Chris Merrington, a commercial consultant, was talking with me about.
Yeah.
Clients that take too much of your time than they pay for, they affect the rest of your business and the rest of your clients. So you don't tolerate them. You have a grown-up conversation and talk about getting the best out of each other. And it affects who you hire. When someone leaves, we don't automatically replace that role. Instead, we have a strategic think about what roles we need, critically evaluate the next hire, where is the opportunity to shape the future of the business? Because if you've only got 60 seats, my God, every single one of them needs to be working. And it also means we can't afford passengers. And everyone knows there are only 60 seats. We talk about 60 precious seats, and they know they need to earn their seat. The expectation is clear from the language we use, and everyone takes responsibility on moving the business forward. So it profoundly impacts what happens in the agency day to day. But it's also forced us to think about how we grow our revenue in a different way beyond charging time for people. So we looked at developing technology products that solve problems in our business that scratch our own itch, knowing that if we do it for ourselves, we can potentially solve problems for other agencies too. And that's where the value lies, and that's where the growth is. And to cut a long 4-year journey short, we have an example of a tech product, coveragebook.com, that is making waves in the PR industry. And it came from conversations with our team. It's been quite a journey to get to the point we're at now, which is a success point. But 30% of the agency is made up PR people. And asking them where we can improve, what we could do better, how we can make life better, the majority said, if only we could automate the creation of coverage books, that would make life better for everyone. For those who don't know what coverage books are, it's where you need to show your client how much coverage you've got for them and all the metrics that go with it. It used to be snipping things out of newspapers and pasting them into a book. It's now snipping pages out of websites and pasting it into PowerPoint, which is quite a soulless thing to do, although very high impact for a client. So by automating it, we've enabled us to cut down 90% of the time on task, but also have all the value for the clients. And what we do is we can take all the URLs of the coverage you've got, put them into Coverage Book, and not only does it produce a beautiful book with all the coverage in, you get all the metrics automatically too. So you cut down all the time on all that research. The team working on that business have had so much positive feedback from the PR industry, and we've been talked about reimagining PR reporting for the 21st century, and it's gone global. It's selling in over 4,000 cities around the world, and it's set to make more money than the agency this year. That's the kind of innovation and growth we're talking about. Yeah. And we've got a number of these ideas lined up.
Brilliant. No, I've been following Coverage Book ever since it started, because obviously being a software as a service product in the same sort of geographic area that we are, interested to see its growth. And I think it's all credit to the way you run the main PropellerNet company, because there are so few examples of services businesses who launch a software as a service product and still keep, you know, both of them healthy, both of them thriving. And I'm interested to see or to understand, does Coverage Book have the same culture as PropellerNet, or is it developing its own? Because they're both very, very different businesses, the service versus the subscription product.
Yes, really good question. So one of the first things we all agreed on was we weren't going to seek any external investment to do Coverage Book. It was going to be completely self-funded, because that is a very important point for us to protect our culture. We didn't want someone sweeping in from the side dictating where we were going. We wanted to do it in our way. So Coverage Book, born out of the agency, is a great way of the culture being very positive and healthy. But you're absolutely right. It's taken on a different dimension because it works in a very, very different way. Their customers are very different to the agency clients. The subscription model is very different to the fee model, and there's a very different operational approaches within the business. However, the values are very similar. The whole mission about make life better is exactly the same, and we are joined by that mission to do good in the industry. The way it operates is slightly different, but the fact that the culture is really important is what holds it all together.
Yeah, superb. No, I think that's a really good model for people to look at. I just want to just circle back to the 60 precious seats again, because something you were saying there about employees having to justify their seats, that must lead to some difficult questions, some difficult discussions. Presumably occasionally you do reach the point where an employee doesn't justify their seat.
What's really interesting is if you engage with people on the start of the journey on values, you've opened the conversation for them to be engaged going forward. And if you give them a voice and you have a two-way conversation, you can pick up issues. I'm not saying everything's perfect, but we do check in really regularly on what's going well and what could do better. There's probably more we could do to make this work, but everybody knows it's not a hidden thing. So, you know, we don't do behind closed doors issues management. We're very open about what's going well and what's not going well. Every Friday, we have a company meeting called New News, and we talk about what's happened in the business. We talk about things that have happened that have gone right and things that have gone wrong. And we celebrate each other. We have a session called Big Ups, where people big each other up for the work they've done during the week. Okay. It's a very open forum for people to share. Less top down, it's more peer to peer. And, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure to make sure things are delivered and delivered well. Again, it's not perfect. There are a few outliers. But I am really, really open to the fact that not everyone could be firing on all five cylinders all the time. We go in cycles. And sometimes people need a little bit more slack, and sometimes they'll be absolutely firing. As long as we can have that open conversation about what's going on right now, how you're feeling, it's why we do the wellbeing check-ins, what's really going on for you right now. It's one of the reasons we ask about dreams, because we want to understand more about the whole person, not just the output on their job on a particular day. So I think you have to have a holistic view on what's going well and look at it over time rather than jump on a specific issue and think everything's not working. It's a much more broad approach to performance than particular moments in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it strikes me there's an interesting potential conflict between your purpose of making life better for not just your team, but for everybody outside your team, and also the inward looking. You know, in one respect, you're doing an awful lot of this for yourselves, for your people. So there's an almost an inward and an outward conflict. Does that make any sense? Is that something that shows up?
Well, what's really interesting is this is why it's important that we work with clients where we understand each other. There's a Gallup report out talking about levels of engagement at work, and only 30% of the global workforce is engaged in what they're doing, which means 70% of people are just turning up, probably not bringing their full selves to work, possibly hoping just not to get fired. What a waste of collective human intelligence is that? Imagine how you can change it if people are engaged. I believe you need to start with your internal people, because the more engaged they are, the better work they will do, the better relationships they'll have with clients, and the more it will have an external impact. If your people aren't engaged, you're not going to have very healthy relationships with your clients. It's going to be a bit forced. You're possibly not going to do the best work you can because people just can't be bothered. I think the two go together. So rather than it being a conflict, I believe that one is a function of the other. Without engaged teams, without happy people, you know, happy people do better work than miserable people. It's not rocket science, but it's rarely factored into the business plan.
Yeah.
And that's the key. That is absolutely the key. And if clients, and we have had people say to us, I don't care the fact you can go and walk down on the beach and do creative brainstorms, not on my money. Okay, well, we're not right to work together then. That's fine. Yeah. Go work with someone else. No problem.
Yeah, definitely. And this is so great, because I can hear it all in your voice and the listeners. Well, I'm sure you're just so passionate about all of this. And you know, it's obviously deeply ingrained in who you are. And that sort of leads on to, I know you've got a book about to be published. It's Super Engaged. What prompted you to start writing it?
Well, over the past few years, since we won Great Places to Work, actually, I've been asked to talk about the agency, and I've stood on stages and held the mic, and I love doing that kind of thing. It's great to get that instant feedback. And it's a story of how we turned PropellerNet from a remarkable small agency to a world-class player. And people always ask me, I'd like to find out more. And I often get the question, you know, have you written a book? Could you write a book? And for the last decade, my stock response has been, I'm too busy to write a book. What I actually mean was, I'm too terrified to write a book. I'm very happy to stand on the stage, but it's a very different thing putting it all down in writing, isn't it? So I went to a conscious business event last winter out in the Alps, and I bumped into a chap called Naveed Akram, who's a brilliant guy, sharing with him the ethos about PropellerNet and our mission to make life better. And he's very astute, and he said to me, Nick, if you really want to make life better, you need to tell your story to help more people. If you want the ripple effect of make life better to go far and wide, you need to write the book. That would be truly living your vision. Oh, you got me.
Cornered.
And you know, I don't know why I was so worried, because yes, it's been hard work, but it's been a wonderful journey of reflection. Because, you know, we as leaders rarely get told we're doing a good job. We tell other people all the time, but we rarely get told ourselves. And writing about the business and getting feedback from other people outside of the business has been really, really positive, and I'd encourage anybody to do it. The big thing for me was getting the structure right. I had this mega deck of all these presentations and talks that I'd done, but I couldn't anchor it. I needed someone to help me with the structure, and luckily I found someone who was brilliant at storytelling. And we just talked for about 3 days, and he wrote my structure for me, which meant I could then freestyle and write whatever I wanted to write about, knowing it had a place to go into the book. And that's what I've been doing for the last year, and it's been brilliant fun. And I've developed a lot of our thinking around our culture as a process of writing the book. So it's kind of come full circle too.
Excellent. And who's it targeted at? Who's the target audience?
It's for anybody who is running a business, wanting to scale up from a startup to our kind of size, HR managers, CEOs, CFOs, anyone who's interested in how culture can make a difference to your business, anyone who's potentially worried about it harming the bottom line, which a lot of people are, you know, as we were saying before, what about all this investment in people? How does it turn to profit? Well, we have the numbers to prove it. It shows up in the numbers every single time, and it shows up in just the work output that you do. So it's for people who are running small businesses that would like to have a positive impact on their bottom line by transforming their business through culture and putting people first.
Great. And what about people who might say, oh, well, you know, it's all well and good, PropellerNet, you've done this fantastic thing, and you're the shining beacon for the culture world, but mine's just a company of 15 people based in Blackpool. You know, it's not relevant to me. Is it full of real sort of tangible things that companies can put in practice tomorrow?
Absolutely. We're referring to it as a working title, as a rough guide. It's got loads of hints and tips, and at the end of every chapter, there are almost action points, you know, how to be super engaged. You win some, you lose some. So there's stories there around what's gone right and what's gone wrong, so you can learn from our mistakes and hopefully not make the same ones. There's also ways that you can think about what we've done in your business And at the end of the book, there's a toolkit to measure engagement really simply. It's nothing complicated. It's just 10 questions. And then what to do from there. So it's a very practical application. It's, you know, theory's great, but this is a practical application of how our culture lives. And I hope it can enable that ripple effect to make life better, go way beyond the walls of the agency. I would also say to those people, we were just 15 people based in Brighton. We're now a global player, and it feels fantastic. And what are you afraid of, would be my question.
Yeah, sounds like you're documenting the year's worth of work, that, or the many years worth of work that, that was put together to make the overnight success that was PropellerNet.
Yeah, it's been a journey. It's been an absolutely brilliant. There are moments of insanity and crazy decisions we've made that we ourselves are questioning, but that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
And every day, the laughter factor for me is so big. If we're not hearing laughter, I know that something's not working, and you can hear laughter a lot, and I laugh a lot, and that's where I think we should be.
Very good. Yeah, no, absolutely. Just one more thing before we leave the book. Again, we talk to a lot of businesses, both in the content that we produce for Breathe, but also in the clients that we have. And if a business owner or leader is struggling, they feel like their culture needs help, what's the place where you would suggest they start?
It's great to understand where your culture's at, because you can get that feeling, you can sort of sense it, but you need to know. And the best question to ask, the first question to ask is, of your team, what's on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely would you be to recommend working in this place? And it's a net promoter score question. So if people are scoring 9s and 10s, you've got a pretty engaged team. So great, your culture is working for you. You need to dig a bit deeper to find out what is working. But if people score, you know, 3s and 4s and are actively detracting, they really wouldn't recommend, you know, you've got an issue. And then you need to dig a bit deeper. And there's specific questions you can ask around various different parts of your business as to what that looks like. So at the back of the book, there's a toolkit of what those questions are to understand. Is your purpose working for you? Is the leadership team connected to the rest of the business? Do people understand their values? What is it that is working for you in your culture and what's not? And there's a very simple set of 10 questions. You can start to discover what is and isn't working. And from there, you can dig a bit deeper and then actually ask people, you know, what are the stories? What's the folklore in this business? What's happening that's creating the culture we've got? And what do we need to do to move it to the culture we want?
Brilliant. And when do you go to press?
So the book is due out week commencing 15th of October.
Not long.
Not long. People can sign up to have a sneak peek of the first few chapters on superengage.co.uk, and we'll be issuing a discount code the week before the launch. So if anyone's interested in getting the copy, but you can find out a little bit more there and see if it piques your interest.
Awesome. Brilliant. No, this is great. Sort of trying to bring things to a close, because I'm value your time. You've obviously got a massively strong culture. You've given us some examples about how it's really helped the business thrive. What about any specific challenges? Are there times when the culture supported a challenge that either you or the business or individual employees have had?
Many.
know, many.
Business gets tough sometimes. And when you're working in a client-agency relationship, you could have the best relationship with your client up front ever. But people in marketing move on a lot. And quite regularly, every 18 months is not unheard of for a marketing director to move positions. And the person that comes in their place may not be the same in terms of values connection as the person you started working with. And we've fallen foul of this a number of times. And what ends up happening is the culture of that working relationship changes, and it may not be as healthy as it once was. And we're very grown up. We don't put the money first. If a client relationship becomes really difficult and we can't do good work, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day, we will have that grown-up conversation with the client. And sometimes they're really surprised and say, okay, I have no idea that's how you're feeling. Let's change something. And other clients, they'll say, okay, we'll need to change agencies. But we need to be grown up and go, yes, we do. So we'll help you find another agency and we'll go and find some work. And because you've got to be brave about this stuff. Toxic revenue is no good to anybody. The client won't be getting what they need, and neither will the agency. And that can start a really negative downward spiral. So culturally, it's not all easy. It's not all easy by any stretch of the imagination. It makes you make hard decisions. So if you say to yourself, is this client making life better for the rest of this business? And the answer is no, you have to take some affirmative action. And sometimes it can be a difficult conversation, but that's way healthier than just letting it rumble on.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic phrase, toxic revenue. I think we should all be looking for where the toxic revenue is in our businesses. That's pretty awesome. A couple more questions to just sort of understand you a little bit more. Where do you get your best ideas from? Is there a particular place or a particular source?
All over the place. I bounce a lot, so I listen to podcasts, I read a lot, TED Talks are amazing. The team are incredible. I mean, we've had a really rich resource of people who are curious and looking at things around the world and what's going on. We have those Slack channels of interesting campaigns and great reads, and there's is sometimes almost too much, but there's so many resources out there. Cal Newport's book, Deep Work, was an absolute inspiration to me when I was writing the book, because he talked about how to focus. And in the world that I live in, and I love opportunities and I love the alternatives and options, it's very hard to focus. And when you're writing a book, you absolutely need to. So there's always an expert out there on any particular subject. And depending on what I'm looking at and what I'm feeling about at that moment in time, I'll go and find that particular expert to get inspiration.
It's the magpie thing, isn't it? Always go after the shiny thing.
Yes, too easy.
And you know what you're doing there resonates so much with, I go and source out really successful and interesting business leaders across the way, and the one thing that links them all is they're lifelong learners. You know, when you meet a business owner and they say, no, I'm at the top of my game, I know it all, you think, oh, okay, well, you know, if you are at the top of your game, you're on the way down, and you're probably not at the top of your game anyway.
Yeah. And you know what? You don't always have to look at people who are experts. Some of the team absolutely surprise me with the ideas they have and the innovations they've got. It can come from everywhere. So yeah, you're right. None of us should ever think we can stop learning. There's so much out there that we can learn more. And it's a lovely journey to be on.
Yeah, no, indeed. Nikki, this has been really great. And I appreciate you taking the time to speak to me. I'll be super excited to get hold of a copy of Super Engaged. How can people connect with you?
You can find me on the website. You can find me on superengaged.co.uk. I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn, and very happy to chat.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, look, thanks, Nikki from Propellernet. It's been great talking to you, and we'll wrap up there.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jonathan. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thanks again to Nikki for her time today. Her passion for making Propellernet a great place to work is inspiring. Talking to Nikki has given me a lot of food for thought, and I'd recommend taking a look at superengaged.co.uk to find out more about her new book. Look out for the next episode of HR Heroes, when I'll be talking to Wendy Reed from HR Revolution about how she's built a pro-employee business. So if you haven't done already, please subscribe to get new episodes as soon as they become available. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and anywhere else you might listen. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review, as we'd love to know what you think. You can find out more about Breathe and what we do by visiting breathehr.com. See you next time.